where do we start, right? It is the biases of what women are supposed to look and sound like. It is, you have to speak in three succinct bullet points with no ums, with just the right amount of emotion to show that you care, but not too much emotion that you lose credibility. It's smile more, smile less, right? Can we stop creating those prerequisites to being heard, that to be heard or have a shot at being heard, you need to look and sound like the dominant norms? And another way we silence each other is to forget how hard this is. For people whose voices have been normed, often white men who are well-funded, they fundamentally do not understand that this is an issue at all. I've always been able to speak my mind. Why can't you do it too? You are personally flawed if you cannot do it. And I was so sick of having the conversation where people would say, tell me what it's like to be an Asian American woman in corporate America.
Welcome to How Women Inspire, where women lead, invest, and give. I'm your host, Julie Castro-Abrams, founder and CEO of How Women Lead and managing partner of the venture firm How Women Invest. Feminist, social justice warrior, mother, friend of 50,000 plus badass women, and an expert at helping top executive women get on boards and break down barriers for women entrepreneurs, investors, and social impact activists. In this podcast, we interview women influencers and leaders from across the globe who are in the C-suite, founding companies, investing, and agents of change. We'll share stories of how women lead. We'll provide insights and data, tips you can put into action, and get to know the women who have fiercely and unabashedly stepped into their power in leadership and opened doors for other women like you. We discuss topics ranging from the journey of getting a board seat, how we can counter cultural frameworks that change the way the world views women leaders, what we're doing to close the gender funding gap, and driving equity for women in all aspects of life and career. My goal is that after every episode, you walk away feeling inspired, unstoppable, ready to level up and step into your power and influence. I want to break down the cultural narratives that hold us back collectively and those messy messages you heard that are taking up way too much of your brain space. I want you to know you're invited in because I know that together we can change the culture, change opportunities, and create the future we want for our daughters and sisters and friends. This is our time. Are you in?
Welcome to How Women Inspire. My guest today is Elaine Lynn Herring. She is a facilitator, speaker, writer, all things women standing in their power and being unabashedly visible. And I'm so excited to get an opportunity to really dive in with her today. So lean in, everyone. Elaine works with organizations and people to really build your communication, collaboration, even conflict management skills. She's worked on six continents. So she really has a global view and really understands how to work with people wherever they're coming from. And she's worked in corporate, government, nonprofit, and she's even trained mental health professionals and political officials, religious communities, and leaders at companies like American Express and Capital One, Google, Nike, Novartis, Shell, Pixar, and the Red Cross. Elaine is a former managing partner at Triad Consulting Group and a lecturer on law at Harvard Law School. Not a bad pedigree, my dear. Working on dispute resolution, mediation, and negotiation. Boy, I need you on speed dial so many times when there's a messy day.
I'm here.
What an honor to have an opportunity to talk to you today and just learn a little bit of what you're beautiful experiences. So thanks for sharing with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Okay. This is going to be an interesting one. You know, what is your theme song or your go-to song on the good days or the tough days?
This is a hard one because I was a music major in college. So I feel like the stakes are high and I have a lot of self-judgment on this. So Miles Davis, Flamenco Sketches on Kind of Blue. Because sometimes you don't really need words to describe what you're feeling. And there's complexity and there's pain and there's joy and it's not too rigid.
You know what? So often it's pop songs, right? I love what you just said. My daughter went to Oberlin in violin performance and my son-in-law is a famous pianist who brings together opera singers and trains them. And I say that because sometimes I say to people, no, really the arts heal us. And if you really take the time to go, I promise you'll walk out feeling more whole. So that Miles Davis song is just a perfect example of celebration and also healing. So thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
All right. This is going to be an interesting conversation right off the get-go here. So you have a book called Unlearning Silence, which I think there's so much noise today. I would love you to share with everyone. Why did you write it? And what's the main premise?
I was really sick of everyone defining the problem incorrectly. So often, particularly when women, but anyone who carries a subordinated identity is not heard, the advice is, well, just do it. Speak up louder, more clearly, have more courage, have more confidence, essentially fix yourself. Yeah. Then you might be heard. Mm. And that just felt wrong and irresponsible. And I say this lovingly and also from my observation of more than a decade teaching skills for negotiation, difficult conversations and feedback across industry and across geographies, because some people, despite their companies or themselves spending a tremendous amount of money and time and energy to take these workshops, still wouldn't negotiate, still wouldn't have the difficult conversation, still wouldn't give or receive feedback, no matter how much their manager, leader, or HR told them they should. So I started to wonder what gives. And what gives is silence. We all have learned some version of silence, when it's okay to speak up, when it's too costly to use our voice. And it doesn't have to be someone else telling us not to talk. It's just that look, or not getting invited to the meeting. You're cut out before you've even begun. And it's not just a problem for us to speak up more. Certainly, I need to unlearn the ways that I've internalized silence and adopted it, and at times been rewarded for it, for not rocking the boat. But the people around me continue to silence me. We, as well-intentioned leaders, silence the very people we claim to support. We can talk about different ways that we do that. And last but not least, silence is baked into the systems we're all part of. Our policies and our practices support certain voices and silence others. So as a starting point, I wanted a more accurate diagnosis of the issue, because that allows us to have a chance to solve for it more effectively, rather than continuing to tell women, go fix yourselves.
Oh my God, I have chills and I have so many questions and examples. We're so aligned, because I have to tell you, people will be like, oh, why don't women just ask for a raise? But it's like, that is a perfect example, because well documented, it doesn't work that way. It actually comes back to bite you. So when women are silent, it's because you have good reasons to be.
Yes.
You are smart and reading the room.
Yes.
So I think I really am hearing from you sort of why, but how, what can we do about it? What are action steps that we can take?
So I love that you're asking, what can we do? And we is interesting. Is we ourselves? Is we collectively, the people around us, we as a society? And I'd say yes to all of those. So we can all diagnose the situation more accurately. And that begins with, the book is structured, the first five chapters are awareness, and the second five chapters are action. Now, I know many of us...
For the silenced people or the people who are silencing?
All of us, right? So I will say, for those of us saying the world is too noisy, we actually need more people to be silent. Chapter three is when silence makes sense. So I want to validate our decisions, our reads of the room in the moment, and also challenge us to say, what assumptions have we internalized that we're from a past workplace or is from a family of origin and may or may not be true in this current relationship? It may be true. It may not be true. So that awareness of, what am I bringing in? What assumptions do I hold? Can I interrogate those assumptions? Right? A concrete example, anytime an older man makes a statement, I take it as truth. I have learned that that's not always true. But I am the youngest daughter of an immigrant family from Taiwan to the United States. To respect my father, respect my elders, meant to not question them. I have a strong relationship with learned silence. And so anytime someone who is male presenting says something, I have to do that. Oh, I'm not 16 anymore. You are not my father. Also, you don't know what you're talking about sometimes. To consciously break that pattern. That's my work to do. But the work that other people can do to stop silencing me is to, oh gosh, where do we start with that? Right? It is the biases of what women are supposed to look and sound like. It is, you have to speak in three succinct bullet points with no ums, with just the right amount of emotion to show that you care, but not too much emotion that you lose credibility. It's smile more, smile less, right? Can we stop creating those prerequisites to being heard, that to be heard or have a shot at being heard, you need to look and sound like the dominant norms? And another way we silence each other is to forget how hard this is. For people whose voices have been normed, often white men who are well-funded, they fundamentally do not understand that this is an issue at all. I've always been able to speak my mind. Why can't you do it too? You are personally flawed if you cannot do it. And I was so sick of having the conversation where people would say, tell me what it's like to be an Asian American woman in corporate America. And I had lots of internal thoughts that I will not externalize here about that question, but decided to say, if you want to know, you can buy the book, you can read it, you can stop asking your colleagues about it. It's one version of a story, right? But to the extent that you do not understand yet in 2024 why it might be difficult for someone else to speak up, let's lay some groundwork for you in the first five chapters and then talk about what you can actually do to break that cycle. And then, of course, systemically, we're asking of policies and practices, who does this silence and who does it support? And being intellectually honest about it rather than assuming our policies and practices impact people the same.
Well, you work globally. I mean, when you were giving that example, I was just thinking about, like, my husband's Mexican. I was thinking about, like, the communication style of so many Mexicans that I know is so much embedded in really fun storytelling, but getting to the point and giving me the three highlights about what I always experience. Unless someone has really learned the American way of communicating. And how do people make sense of how to fit into certain norms to a certain extent so they're not silenced? But, you know, how do you help people navigate?
How are we making meaning of the world is a fundamental question that is we're constantly answering, but is subconscious. And we use reactive thinking rather than reflective thinking. We also don't know how to code other people's behaviors. Yeah. So a lot of it is a deconstruction of, if your colleague is staying silent in the meeting, it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have anything to say. They could be a post-processor, meaning their best thinking comes about 20 minutes after the meeting. Or someone said to me the other day, my best thinking happens in the shower. Do we want someone's best thinking or do we just want quick thinking? Do we want the best ideas or just want the loudest ideas? The more that we're able to identify for ourselves and translate for people, the more likely we are able to mitigate the miscommunications and misinterpretations that come. But that's also a curiosity, right? What best supports your voice? What makes it easiest for you to share your thoughts and feelings? Because I really want to hear them.
Beautiful. I love this. I've got so many questions. All right. In the book, you've got four anchors of speaking up. Can you talk a little bit about those and maybe give us some example?
Yeah. So the four anchors are start with why, connect the dots, make the ask clear, and embrace resistance. And they're designed as anchors because often people, in terms of speaking up, are like, just tell me what to say. And I could give you words and a script, but that's not going to work. So I don't want to waste your time doing that versus what are basic principles and anchors you can hold on to as the waves of doubt or frustration or defensiveness from the other person come into play. So start with why plays off Simon Sinek's idea of start with why. And for me, it is, what is the bigger why? What matters to you enough that you would take the risk to share your thoughts? Because we know that there are costs. There are also benefits. But whether that is inequity, whether that is making it better for the people around you, whether that is you care enough about the relationship, what is it that matters more to you? So what's your bigger why? Matters more to you than the discomfort that is going to be there. The aim isn't to be comfortable with it, even though that would be nice. It's what makes it worth it for us to push through or navigate that discomfort. The second is Connect the Dots, and this contains one of my favorite stories in the book, which is Toilet Gate with my husband. And I'll just leave that as a spoiler there, but it is an instance in which we have a difference of perspective. And it taught me we each see the world differently. And I get so annoyed, particularly in personal relationships, because it's like, can't you just read my mind? We've been married however long. But reality is, because we are different human beings, you know, we filter different information, have access to different information, make meaning of the world differently. So can we connect the dots for each other? And that often allows us to see where the disconnect is. Third anchor is make the ask clear. And this is a hard one, right? But if we want other people to support us, we increase the likelihood that they support us, they hear us, right? We are speaking up to be heard. If we can be clear what role they can play to best support us. This is like Gottman love languages, if you want to go there, but also, you know, I just need to vent today. Or no, I'm actually asking for advice because you doing this empathy thing, not working. It's a waste of my time, right? Can we be clear of what we need? And sometimes we figure it out by them doing the wrong thing. But getting clear of here's what I need, here's how you can best support me in this moment, increases the likelihood they can do it. Last but not least, the fourth anchor is embrace resistance. So often when we speak up, we wish it was, you know, we're just sailing through, it's blue skies, butterflies, people just say yes, and we're good to go. But resistance is part of the process. Resistance is actually engagement. And anyone who's done sales knows this. If someone says no, you're like, oh, score, that's a win, right? Because at least they've engaged with us. If there's resistance, we can start to unpack the resistance to say, you know, what concerns do you have? What would need to be true to get to yes? All of those classic negotiation tools. But so often when we're met with resistance, it's like, oh, well, that failed. Versus, nope, this is a natural part of the process. Let me note it. Here we are in the process. How do I engage with it? Which, you know, with boundaries may not mean that I tackle it today. A fundamental principle of the book is agency, that there is utility in silence. And the difference between silence that is additive or oppressive is agency. Do you get to choose? So taking that same principle, you know, what can I carry today? What can I tackle today? We each are carrying so much and fighting so many battles. Which do I want to tackle today? And if resistance right now is a pause, you know, going to go to something else, that's okay. But to not be thrown off when resistance rears its ugly head, because it's there.
Yeah. Oh my God, this is beautiful. Thank you so much. As someone who's a workplace leader myself, and for everybody listening, which is, that is the audience, what can we do to create a more welcoming environment for expression that really says to people, I want to work with you to learn how you best communicate? What would you say?
I think you just answered it, right? That question, I want to learn. Well, notice, if I'm going to get technical and nerdy here, notice there's two things. There's the expression of intent. I want to get to know you better, or I want to know how to best support you, whatever positive statement is true and accurate. And curiosity, what does that look like for you? That's going to look different. But so many of the mismatches and misunderstanding is trying to shoehorn everyone into the same mold, that everyone should speak in real time versus, no, you actually communicate more effectively in asynchronous communication. Awesome. Let's Slack. And that's not diminished or any less than real-time conversation. I mean, that's a 30-second conversation. Yeah. Maybe 3 minutes if you want to go in detail for the post-processors, flag it before your next one-on-one. That solves so many of the things that we typically learn by trial and error.
Yeah.
While avoiding the relational damage along the way.
I love it. Thank you so much. This is brilliant. I have so much I'm percolating on right now myself about how I can be better. And I'm going to buy the book for sure. I think about all the ways in which we're trying to, it's like, oh, go to speech training. Like, how do I get somebody into the box that's already been developed? And thank you very much for that. We're almost out of time. What would you say are your, I mean, even as an author, as a woman with your unbelievable background, what are the messages you want, the advice and messages you want to give to the women who are listening to this call today?
You are enough. You're enough as you are. the systems around us tell us we are the problem, that we are not enough. So often we are measured for our utility, right? What results can we produce rather than our humanity? And so some of our work is to maintain whatever are healthy boundaries for ourselves, to redefine success for ourselves. And also, and I know this is aligned with it, so I'll sort of do the plug here, frankly, to support one another. Right. And to disrupt the things, the assumptions that we might have internalized, because it's in the water that we're all swimming in, the air that we're breathing, that women should look and sound like this. Let us disrupt those assumptions rather than perpetuate them. The other piece I'll say is that unlearning silence is not an individual sport. It is a team sport. And so we need each other. Right. We need each other to help us become the people we want to become, to tell us you do you, to tell us you are enough as you are, or you are brilliant, to disrupt those voices that otherwise take up so much space in our lives and in our hearts. So let's do it together.
Oh my God, it's beautiful. And even your voice, Elaine, you've got the best voice.
I apparently have a career. This is in the book. I have been told that I have a career in backup career in recording sleep aids and meditations. If this whole author, consultant, conflict management thing doesn't work out.
Well done. You know what? As I hear you, it's so complicated. So many of us have worked so hard to learn how to do it in the box that we were taught. And I think about my own daughter, you know, she's 30 years old. And she tells me, Mom, I hear you in my head all day long at work. And you're like, get to the point. Be crisp. part of what I was, you know,
totally.
I had learned those skills or whatever they are.
Yeah.
I had learned from the major culture. When you have worked so hard and learned and been successful, it's so hard to let go of that. But it's really important to create space for the other ways. And we're not going to change society in 24 hours, but the evolution of it. How can people find the book and how can people find you, Elaine?
Yeah, the book is available wherever books are available for purchase, hardback. Large print, audiobook if you're not sick of my voice, ebook. And people can find me on LinkedIn at Elaine Lynn Herring or elainelynnherring.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Elaine. What a gift to spend time with you. I feel so filled up and I don't need to take a nap at all. I love hearing your voice. It just gives me a sense of centeredness so I could hear your message differently. And that's also a big part of how we communicate well. So thank you for that. Thanks for all you're doing.
Thanks for having me.
What a gift you are.
And with that, I want to thank you all for listening to today's episode of How Women Inspire. And because your inspiration should not stop when this podcast ends, head over to our website, howwomenlead.com. Follow us on LinkedIn at How Women Lead and subscribe or follow on your favorite podcast app to find out how you can proactively take charge and step into your power through our workshops and activism. In our loving network, we want to propel you. See you next time, ladies. And remember to be unabashedly visible.